Big Tony. What's up, Big Tony?
Good morning for a post-daylight savings time episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How you feeling?
It always just like throws me off a little bit. It's not too bad, but it's just weird. Like I get tired at a time I'm not used to getting tired at. It gets dark at a time I'm not used to it getting dark at, you know?
Yeah. Do you like it? Or some people are really upset about it and some people are like, they just don't really care. Where do you fall in that spectrum?
I think it would be nice to not ever have to think about it again and for time to just be the time. That's how I feel about it.
I used to have that feeling when every clock had to be manually changed. Mm. But since basically not every clock now, but like since almost every clock that I have automatically does it, I'm like, ah, whatever. Not that big of a deal. But it is still annoying when I like my microwave. I'm like, ugh, damn it. Gotta change my microwave.
Like the stove, the car.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, like, I don't really mind. Not a big deal. I feel like it's like when it starts getting darker earlier, I'm like, oh, I don't know, it's a little cozy. I like it, but not a big deal either way.
It gets darker earlier anyways, though.
Yeah, no, it's true. So then all of a sudden overnight, it's like, damn, yeah, it's only just 5.
Yeah, I feel like it really demarcates winter.
Yeah. How's everything else, bro?
Can't complain. Staying super busy. Got a lot going on.
What's going on?
You know, I think we've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, I do live event and concert production, mm-hmm. and then I do some install work, and then I do podcast work. And then the thing I've been trying to do is get into more recording in the home studio. And so it's just like a lot of conflicting kind of schedules all on top of each other when they all happen at once. They don't always mm-hmm. all happen at once, but like there's just some weeks where it's like, well, I'm getting up early for this and I'm staying up late for that. And then in between, I'm doing these things and it's great. It's the good problem to have. It's just seasonal for me, but not on a specific season. It just like it comes in waves, basically.
It's like unpredictable waves. It's not
very
like,
unpredictable. Exactly.
It's not like someone who's they do taxes and stuff, so they know what time of year is going to be crazy for you. It's like you have no idea, and like you just got to roll with the tide.
And there's like some weeks where it's just like I know in advance, like, yep, I'm scheduled to the bone. Like, cool, I can plan for that. And then some weeks were like open. You know, and then all of a sudden, everybody's like, hey, can you do this? Yeah. Can you do this?
Does that put more stress on your relationship when you're not home as much?
Yeah. I think more than anything, just like the alternative schedule. Because, you know, mm-hmm. my partner, she works a lot, but she's on like more of a 9-to-5. So mm-hmm. like weekends are weekends. Weekends aren't always weekends for me. And like
correct.
Evenings are evenings for her. And evenings aren't always evenings for me, you know, so. But yeah, we work it out.
She understands.
It's all good. Like, yeah.
She's okay with it. Yeah.
Yeah, we live together, so you know, you see each other.
How long have you guys been together?
Man, like
that was 9 years? Is it you have a ring on it?
No.
Wow. Are you like against the I forget. I'm like, it's like 8 a.m. What's the word? Are you against
the institution?
Are you against marriage? Institution. That's the freaking word. Thanks, Tony. Are you like, fuck institution of marriage? Or you're like, no, we're just like, we're doing well.
Yeah. It's just not.
Is she like,
impressing.
Hey, is she like, hey, so what do you think?
No.
So she's good with it too.
Yeah. I feel like we're like really on the same page about things.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
Yeah,
like
it always comes up though. Everyone's like, what?
Do you two ever talk about it? You're like, so like, what do you think? Or is it, no, it's just like, it's understood that you're both on the same page about it.
Yeah. I mean, it comes up. I mean, it's like, you know, as time passes, more and more of your friends get married and have kids and all that stuff. And, you know, so it does come up, but.
Do you want kids? You didn't think today would be all about you.
I didn't. I'm like, this is a different Q&A today, y'all. I always thought like, yeah, like I would have a family, but it was always like this future event, this future mm-hmm. version of myself. And so I don't know if it's just like an arrested development syndrome or what, but yeah, it's just like I've never gotten to that point where I'm just like, yep, it's time, I'm ready, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people tell me like it never is like that. It just happens. You just do it and it's the best thing you've ever done. But, you know, I'm still on the other side of that, and you know, I'm not in a rush.
I mean, there's no rush, so you're good. Like, you don't need to rush, but yeah, I think very rarely are people like, yeah, I'm fully 100% prepared for this.
Yeah.
Like, I think the term ready is not correct, cuz like in my I was definitely ready. Well, I was ready, but like I didn't feel prepared.
Yeah, fair.
Right? Like I was like, yeah, like I'm ready for this, but I didn't feel prepared for it. And I don't think you'll ever feel fully prepared for anything. I don't think like in any situation, especially a difficult situation, like, yeah, you're fully prepared to go use the bathroom. You feel very prepared to do that. But like fully prepared to have a child, fully prepared to, I don't know, like I would imagine making a really big business decision, fully prepared to, if you're in the military, to go on an operation, like, I don't know, maybe some military members would be like, no, I felt fully prepared for that operation. So I don't know. But I feel like really, really, really big decisions, often you might be ready for it, but you don't always feel fully prepared for it.
Right, right. Like, how could you be prepared for something you've never done before?
And yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And you're not. You're not fully prepared for it. Because that's a great point, because you've never done it. So you're going to make mistakes. You're not fully prepared, but you sort of roll with the punches and figure it out. I bet there have been a lot of jobs you've been on where you're like, I'm not fully prepared for this. And then you just got to roll with the punches.
I think every job I've ever had was like,
yeah,
just a learning experience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you want like 4, 5, 6 kids? How many kids?
Every year on the year? No. You know, I have one sister. So like 2 kids always felt like a reasonable thing.
Yeah.
You've got siblings, but like it's not like a whole
it's not like a town.
yeah But yeah, like I said, it's like not something I'm thinking about unless I'm asked, which as I get older I get asked a lot more, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah Well, do you, I won't ask if you don't want me to ask anymore.
I mean, we talked about it.
Okay. So every episode, I'm going to bring it up.
I could see you doing that too. It's
what
like
else?
Countdown,
man?
On the Jordan Side Mini podcast.
Just restart every podcast. So, are you trying for kids yet?
It's like my mother, you know.
Does she ask? Is your mom asking about it?
Not so, so. So, I think in her mind, it's like marriage leads to that. So,
yep.
For her, it's like, so have you thought about, you know?
Does she ask you pretty frequently?
No, not frequently, but you know, I can tell she wants to be grandma.
Yeah.
And my sister is older than me, does not have kids.
Does she want kids or no?
I mean, I'd have to ask her, but like for my whole life it hasn't been like a topic. I don't know what happened with us. We're just not thinking about it, you know.
Your mom is just like, I want grandkids.
Yeah, and she's from Peru, so you know, it's like they all have families.
It's like a huge part of the culture.
Families a lot closer.
Yeah Do you live close to your parents?
No They're in Chicago. So
oh, got it. Okay.
I came out to DC and I've been here ever since.
Is your sister close to your parents?
She's in Charleston.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So your mom is like, her kids are far away.
She's like, come on.
You're killing me.
What are you doing?
That's funny. She loves you both very much.
Yes. Yes. I feel very lucky.
So what else, Tony? What do we got on the books today? We'll take the spotlight off you.
Yeah. Should we turn the camera back on the main event?
Let's do it.
So we've been getting a lot of great questions. So I'm just going to cycle through and start throwing them out there and see where it goes.
So people are DMing you.
Mm-hmm.
Your Instagram handle is in the show notes. So if people want to shoot you a message, they can go to the show notes, Tone Reverie.
That's right.
And they just send you a message, say, hey, could you and Jordan talk about this? And so people have been sending you messages.
Exactly.
Thank you to everyone who's sending Tony messages. We appreciate it. We appreciate all the love and support. It means the world to us.
Yeah, no, and it's just been so cool interacting with your peeps, with the followers.
Yeah, they're a really incredible community.
Yeah, yeah, so positive.
Yeah, which is really cool. Is extraordinary.
So this is from Kelsan44.
Kelsan44. Let's hear it.
Hi, Tony. I'm a huge fan of the podcast you do with Jordan Syatt. I found him when he did the VO2 Max podcast, and I've been hooked since.
Oh, nice.
I actually just joined the inner circle, and less than a weekend, I'm hooked.
Yes, I love it. That's amazing.
My question for you guys is about timing of protein. I once had a trainer tell me that the most optimal time to consume protein is within 45 minutes of a lifting session. So I normally drink a protein shake after, but I'm wondering if it's true. What makes that 45 window the most optimal time?
First of all, thank you, Kelsan. Second, thank you so much for joining the inner circle. Your support means the world to me and my entire family. So thank you. I'll say if you're hooked already, wait until the new app drops in January 2024, because this new app is going to take it to an entirely different level. And it's already, like, obviously I'm biased, but I think it's a pretty damn good program. But the new app is going to be wild. So that, I'm very excited for that. But third to the question, this is the term for this is the anabolic window, that there's a certain window of time post-workout that is the quote-unquote most optimal, and in some circles, they say it's the most important time to get your protein in. And some people go so far as to say that if you don't get your protein in within this time frame, then your workout was essentially a waste. There's a whole spectrum. Some people say it's not a waste, but you're not getting the most benefit. And then some people say the anabolic window doesn't matter at all. Here's the truth. The most important thing is your total protein intake throughout the day. And when I say the most important thing, I mean whether you get your protein in during your workout, whether you're sipping on your protein while you're training, which some people do, or you...
I enjoy that, by the way.
Yeah, especially put some protein in a water or like a almond milk or something. I would do regular milk, but sometimes it's a little bit heavier. And also I'm explosively lactose intolerant. So it just isn't a good situation. But whether it's like during the workout, immediately post workout, like 5, 10 minutes or 30 minutes or 45 minutes, or you wait 2 hours, it's not that big of a deal. I'm not going to say it's irrelevant, but it's not that big of a deal, to be honest. And I'll explain a little bit further in a second. But what I would say is, if you were an elite high level bodybuilder, like elite, and when I'm saying bodybuilder specifically, I'm not even saying athlete. I'm not saying soccer player or gymnast or any like other athlete. I'm specifically talking about bodybuilder whose goal is to put on as much muscle as possible. That's when I would say maybe it starts to actually make a difference, because then that's when like the minutiae really begin to matter. But even if you're a high level athlete, if I was working with a sprinter or a soccer player or a wrestler or a rock climber, whatever it is, I don't give a shit if it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or even 2 hours. It's really not that big of a deal. It doesn't make that big of a difference. You will still be able to build plenty of muscle regardless of whether your protein is within that 45 minute range. What's also important to remember here is that what you eat before the workout is still being digested after your workout, unless your workout is like 12 hours long, then all of a sudden it's no longer being digested. But let's say you have protein before your workout, like within 2 hours. And maybe it's just a protein shake, or maybe you had a whole meal. Maybe you had a turkey sandwich, which had bread and it had some lettuce and tomato. And who knows, maybe you had a piece of fruit, maybe you had an apple with it. So let's say you had 30 grams of protein in a turkey sandwich and then other things as well 2 hours before. Or let's say, you work out in the morning, but you had some eggs. So you had eggs, which also have the fat in it. And then you also had some toast with it, whatever it is. It's not just protein. You have protein with some other things. Now the digestion slows because you have other nutrients with it. It's a bigger meal. So why do they say you need protein so quickly? It's because you need amino acids immediately to get into your bloodstream. Well, if you have this protein 2 hours before and then you work out, well, by the time you're done the workout, you still have amino acids in your bloodstream from that meal. It's not like you need more immediately on top of it. You're still digesting that protein. It's still in your bloodstream. So especially if you have a good pre-workout meal, the need for a post-workout protein is severely diminished because you're still digesting the protein from before. I would say the people who it matters the most for are the people who are working out more or less fasted because they work out really early in the morning. And for them, I say, let's make sure that you get a lot of protein in at dinner the night before you go to bed. And then if you don't want to have something to eat before your workout, you could do what we spoke about earlier, which is just like maybe sip on protein and water during your workout, or just have protein relatively soon after, within an hour or two. But either way, what this really all boils down to is your total protein intake at the end of the day. At the end of the day, as long as you hit your total protein, you're good. I would ideally prefer you not to get all of your protein in one sitting. There are some benefits to having what's known as protein pulses, where you have a significant portion of protein at several different intervals throughout the day. This is especially important as people get older, to have several different big meals of protein in order to maintain their muscle mass. Whether we're talking 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, there are some benefits to that. There's also benefits to that from the perspective of staying full over a long period of time. Where you have more protein space throughout the day, you'll stay more full. It's easier to maintain an appropriate caloric range. But from a muscle building perspective, most important is total protein throughout the day.
Yeah. And, you know, the thought occurred to me from a practical standpoint, having a protein shake at a specific time, like after a workout or in the evening before I go to bed or whatever, it just makes it easier to get it for me. So, you know, outside of the window, having a protein shake after a workout is just like easier. It's like, yeah, I worked out. I'm thinking about it. I'm going to have a protein shake. Feels good. Like validates my effort. That's cool too, right?
I think it's also very personality type driven too. So for example, my personality is very much just like, yeah, we'll figure it out. Like go with the flow. Like I don't like to be overly structured. Mm-hmm. I don't like having this rigid schedule. That's just never felt good to me. Whereas my best friend, Mike Vacanti, is the exact opposite. He wants to know what's the schedule, what's the time, this is when we're doing it. And so for him, even though he knows the anabolic window is a myth, like you don't need to get protein in almost immediately, he does it. Every single work, like he has his protein shake ready to go. This is when I do it. I have my protein. It helps keep him on track. He's like, cool. Like you schedule your workout, you schedule your protein intake. Like that's what he likes to do. So even though he knows logically that it's not necessary for him, it's easier for me because it's easier for me to get it in right now and it's done. Whereas for me, the way that I teach is like, it's not that big of a deal. We'll figure it out. It's based on the science, but also my personality type. So you have to do what really works for you from your personality.
Nice.
I've been getting fed all these random Borat clips on my Instagram lately. I think I liked one of them and now they're just all popping up and I need to watch that movie again.
That's a good problem to have, right?
Bro, that is people either love it or they absolutely hate it. My mom hates it. My mom absolutely hates everything about it. For me, that's my humor. I am breathless when I watch Borat. And also, I have so much, dude, he sat down with some of the most incredible people. And when I say incredible, I mean like very famous, very powerful people. I don't know if they're good people, but he stayed in character in the most insane situations. You know what's crazy? He literally got a leader from the Israeli government and a leader from the Hamas terrorist organization to sit down at a table together. This wasn't in Borat. This is when he was being Bruno. Like he was pretending to be that, like the gay character.
Is it the German guy?
Where
he was like,
Austrian.
So hummus is.
Yes. Yes. He's
like, well,
he's
we can agree
down.
On that at least. Yes.
Dude, he's literally, I don't know how he got this interview. But he's like this, like, yeah. So I'm like, Bruno, what? He's like pretending to be this gay Austrian guy, like very flamboyantly gay. He gets a leader from the Israeli government and he gets a leader from Hamas, and they sit down at a table and he looks at the Israeli guy and he's like, so like, what's the problem with hummus? And he's like, what are you talking about? And all of a sudden you see this Hamas guy and the Israeli guy being like, you're confusing hummus with Hamas. And Bruno's like, but what? So like, you don't like hummus? And the Hamas guy is like, no, we both like hummus. It's vegetarian. It's healthy. It's beans. And Bruno, and then he's like, oh, so we can agree that everyone likes hummus. Okay.
Like that's a good start, right?
So then you have like these two diabolically opposed people agreeing that they both like hummus. It was unbelievable. Sacha Baron Cohen is an absolute genius, and I think one of the greatest actors of all time to be able to do that type of thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the newer Borat, and I haven't seen that other than that clip. So yeah, I've got some homework. But he's
I haven't
also
seen
done...
the newer one either. I just saw the original like 12 times.
He's also done some serious acting roles. He was in the Chicago 7.
Bro, you want to see an amazing
the
movie?
Spy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a true story.
Yeah.
That's one of the most amazing stories ever told. If you haven't seen The Spy, I think it's on Netflix with Sacha Baron Cohen. This is a true story. I'm not going to do any spoilers, and his role in that was extraordinary.
Yeah, it's always cool when you see someone who comes from like a strictly comedic background and then they do like their first serious role and you're like, I don't know if they can pull it off. And if they can pull it off, it definitely, your respect grows.
Especially because you can't look at him without seeing him in that like neon
Borat,
yellow
yeah.
bathing suit, that like a Borat character. So for him
Ali
to then
G.
go do this ridiculously serious, very scary, sad film, and within 10 seconds you no longer see him as Borat, but you see him as this other character, that's incredible. Because a lot of people, they do a character and they can never get out of that character, no matter what films they do, no matter what roles they play. I think he's one of the most underappreciated actors of our time.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
The Spy. Yeah, amazing.
So this question is from Lizby33.
Lizby. What's up, Lizby? Wow, we had 44 and now 33. Let's go. The double numbers.
Whoa. Hey, Tony, I just listened to you and Jordan's new podcast. I've been listening to the mini podcast for a few years now and love the content. My questions are, I'm currently studying to take the NASM exam by the end of this year. I'd love to hear Jordan's advice for people like me working on getting their CPT certification. What's the best advice he would give a new trainer in the industry? And what are his thoughts on mastering the scientific content, learning from other trainers, and helping/working with clients? Thanks so much to both of you.
Love that. Again, first and foremost, thank you for the kind words. Thank you for your support over the years. It means the world to me. Congratulations on going after this. I love it. I'll start by saying I have an entire podcast devoted to this, like, and not just one episode. Like, I have an entire podcast with well over 100 episodes just for personal trainers with my buddy Mike Vacanti. It's called the How to Become a Personal Trainer podcast. We'll put a link to that podcast in the show notes if you want to listen to that. So let's go through, Tony, what was the first question she asked?
I'd love to hear Jordan's advice for people like me working on getting their CPT certification.
Okay.
And then what's the best advice he would give a new trainer in the industry?
And then what are my thoughts on like mastering the science and all of that? Got it. Okay. So here's what I'd say. I would say, yes, like the goal is to get to a point in which you are a master of the science. I would say like you understand it. You understand not just the theory, you understand the principles, you understand the practical application. I'll say one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen a lot of coaches make is they spend so much time and so much energy trying to be an expert in the science that they don't actually ever help anybody. They just spend all their time studying. And then this is the perfect example of being ready, but not feeling prepared, by the way.
Yep.
Where they have this idea that they need to be smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter. And that until they reach this ambiguous level of intelligence, they are not ready to actually coach people or help people. And that's just not the case. Oftentimes, I've seen a number of good friends of mine really shoot themselves in the foot because they have this idea that they're not ready yet to help people, when the reality is they could have helped thousands and thousands of people, but they just didn't feel prepared for it yet. And I think a lot of it is because they were comparing themselves to the perception of other coaches online. And I specifically and deliberately said the perception, not actually what the person was. But one of the biggest fears that I know many coaches have is they fear not appearing smart enough. And so when they start making content online, they'll try and use fancier language, bigger words. They'll try and impress other coaches instead of speaking to the people that actually need their help. And this was a mistake that I made early on in my career, where when I was making content, I wanted other coaches to be impressed with me and to respect me. So I would use very complex language, and it was terrible because while some coaches were impressed that I could know this language and use it, they weren't being my clients. Like, they weren't hiring me. They were just like, okay, cool. So this guy knows what he's talking about. Very cool. But then the people who actually needed my help, they couldn't understand what I was saying and they had no interest in reading it because I was using super complex language that you only learn in higher education or if you've spent enough time studying this stuff to learn this. And it's like, if they wanted to have that level of knowledge, then they probably would have been a coach anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the best things that I did was I started, you know, using Harry Potter references, using like the easiest to understand language. I don't try and make it overly complex. I'm not trying to impress anybody. I'm trying to help people. That's the difference. Like, I don't care about impressing. I care about helping. So when you're learning this stuff, it's very, 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 very important to understand, number one, that when you're relaying the information, your responsibility is not to impress people. It's to help the people who need it. And number two is your goal, first and foremost, I think about doctors, like I think part of the oath of what a doctor will do, they'll say like, first, do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's like the potentially the first thing to say, first, do no harm. A lot of coaches, and I use coach very liberally here, they end up hurting people because they do really stupid shit. They have them standing on one foot on a Bosu ball, doing like random, like rotation, like stupid, stupid stuff. And they get hurt. I was an expert witness on a case many, many years ago about a coach who had their client on a Bosu ball. She fell off. She destroyed her entire knee, like LCL, ACL, MCL, PCL, meniscus, everything. She won't ever walk the same again. It was a multi-million dollar case. People get mad when I say, like, when I sort of shit on the Bosu ball, and it's not a bad piece of equipment inherently, but a lot of people are like, you should be able to stand on it. It's like, I'm talking about this from experience. There are many cases where people are millions and millions of dollars sued for doing stupid stuff on it. But first, do no harm. Just don't hurt them. And if you can get your clients to move without hurting them, you're helping. If you're allowing them to get exercise, to move, to strength train, to get some cardio in, to do some mobility, and you're not hurting them, you are better than a huge percentage of coaches already. And if you don't start working with clients, then someone else is going to work with them. And you don't know if they're good or not. You don't know if they're going to hurt them. So I think that you have a responsibility to start working with clients early on so that you can actually be a positive role in the world and that you can start helping people and do no harm at the very, very least. And then as you learn and as you get experience, you're going to be able to help them. You're going to be able to help them progress, not just do no harm now, but now you're really going to be able to help them build more muscle, get stronger, get more flexible because you're learning more, you're getting more experience. But I really do think that as long as, like, once you start learning, you should start coaching people. You should start coaching early on and with the mindset of first, do no harm. Keep it very basic. Keep it very simple. There's no reason to have them balancing on random shit. Keep them on the ground and just do very basic exercises and get them moving. Do no harm. And before you know it, you're going to be really doing amazing things and helping people and keeping them from going to someone who could potentially hurt them.
Yeah, that's such a great answer. And so applicable to any trade or service, right? It's like you kind of have to do it to learn how to do it better.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Me and Stuffs.
Me and Stuffs. All right.
This is for the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. just wanted to thank you guys for the explanation of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You guys have been extremely vulnerable discussing it all with just talking about it as amazing, well-rounded human beings that you are is much appreciated. It's such a breath of fresh air to hear.
Thank you.
I knew about the conflicts in the past, but never really understood them, and this cleared it right up. I hope the positive feedback outweighs the bad you expect to get. Best regards. Can you go over in detail the grease the groove method you talked about at the end of the last episode? Would this be a decent method to lean into getting back in shape after not being active at all besides a physical job?
Thank you so much for the kind words. I appreciate it. I appreciate all the kind words, especially around that specific episode or both episodes now. In regard to grease the groove, yeah, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing method that you can use. And for everyone who doesn't know, Tony, could you link that episode in the show notes that we spoke about grease the groove?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. So we'll put that episode in the show notes. But basically, it's where you don't ever go to failure and consistently throughout the day. So for example, let's say you want to grease the groove with push-ups. Rather than doing 3 sets of 10 push-ups and really, really struggling with them in one workout, you make a rule where, okay, every time I go into the kitchen, I'm going to do 2 push-ups. And you, let's say you can do 10 push-ups. Well, now 2 push-ups at a time is not a big deal. 2 push-ups is nowhere near failure at all. But let's say you can, quote unquote, only do 3 push-ups. Well, now 2 push-ups is very, very difficult. So instead of doing 2 push-ups on the ground, maybe you do 5 push-ups with your hands elevated onto the kitchen table every time you go in the kitchen. So you need to adjust based on your current level of strength. But basically, you do a small number of repetitions for an exercise very consistently throughout the day. You could put a chin-up bar in your bedroom doorway. And so like you can do those, whether it's bodyweight squats. You could do it with literally anything. It's an amazing way to start getting back into exercise. It's an amazing way to specifically start getting back into strength training. I wouldn't use it with something more cardio focused. You could do it with mobility, depending on what you're doing. But I mean, it's just going to immediately start, more than anything, it's going to get you back in the habit of saying, okay, I want to focus on my strength. It's now you're thinking about it. I think one of the reasons people end up getting out of shape is because they stop thinking about it. They don't prioritize it. Whereas if like, hey, every time I go in my kitchen, I'm going to do 2 push-ups, you're thinking about it. And there will have significant benefits, both muscular, tendon, ligament, joint strength, core strength, and then never mind the mental and emotional and behavioral benefits of actually prioritizing it. So yeah, I think it's phenomenal.
Part of what I really like about it is the fact that you're never really going to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think over the course of the day, you're able to do more repetitions, right? More volume mm-hmm. over the day because you're never hitting that stopping point. Like with pull-ups, like once I fail on a set, the yeah. next set is garbage. Like yep. I'm already cooked. I'm done. I've been doing a doorway pull-up bar. And so every time I think about it, I go all the way up the stairs, do like 2 reps, whatever, come back down, keep doing my work. And I've been completely unscientific about it. It's just
good
doing it throughout the day. Some days I feel like I'm overcooked, so the next day I take it easy. And pull-ups have always been like a kind of a sticking point for me. So mm-hmm. I, especially with my knee, it's just been great to just like focus on that and still be doing something, still be making progress. And I'm definitely noticing a difference.
I love that.
Physiologically and just how I feel. So
I also wonder how many extra steps you're getting a day just by being like, oh, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to go upstairs. I bet like it adds up to it, probably at least 1,000 or more.
At first I thought of it as an obstacle. It was like, yeah, like the pull-up bar is like the only place I can put it is like all the way up there. And like, I'm generally down here doing stuff. So I don't go up there after I get up in the morning usually. So it's yeah. like, oh no, actually this is a perk, not a bug. It's
yeah.
Now I'm going up the stairs and moving shift. And you know, just even just going a couple flights of stairs and back gets your heart rate up a little bit. It
yep.
shakes it up. If I've been sitting at the desk mixing all day, like it's great. So
I love that. That's awesome.
All right. This is from Taryn FF.
Taryn or Karen?
Taryn.
Taryn.
T-E-R-R-Y-N. This is for the Jordan Syatt podcast. I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about a first-time pregnancy from a health perspective. My fiance and I are getting married in February and have been together almost 7 years. I'll be 30 in 2024. So kids will have definitely been on our minds. This is so funny because it's the opposite of me. I hear a lot of moms in society blaming their poor health choices on their kids and or pregnancy. Over the last 3 years, I've lost 35 pounds, built muscle, and feel like the best version of myself I have ever felt, which is amazing, and I'm really proud of my progress. With that said, I don't want to lose that after having kids because I still want to be this best version for them, to be a good mom and wife. So I guess a couple questions to touch on would be, one, do you stay in normal maintenance calories during a pregnancy? Along those lines, is eating for two, in quotes, really an accurate excuse to eat like an asshole?
Love this. Amazing questions. Thank you for the kind words. So I'll start by saying every pregnancy is different and every woman is different from the perspective of their response to the pregnancy. So the most important thing for me to say is you really, really, really need to consult with your own doctor and specialist when you're going through this. I think it would be morally and ethically irresponsible of me to just dive right into this answer and be like, let me tell you how your pregnancy is going to go from someone who's never been pregnant and can't get pregnant and never will, like, just stupid. And I've never, like, I'm not a pregnancy specialist. So please, please, please take everything I say from the perspective of the vast majority of people I've worked with are women. That I've worked with many women before, during, and after their pregnancy. So I have a lot of experience with it, but also every single woman is different. That's probably the most important thing I've learned from all this is every single woman experiences pregnancy differently. And even if you have multiple pregnancies, every pregnancy might be very different. So this is really, really important to understand. Now, having got that caveat out of the way and hoping no one just fucking shits on me in the reviews now, let's discuss. I'll start by saying this. We'll talk about eating for two first. No, you don't need to eat for two from the perspective of, like, you don't need to eat 2,000 extra calories to fuel this pregnancy. It's actually a very small number of calories. Like, usually, like, depending on the individual, like 300 to 500 extra calories per day is plenty. So the idea that you need to, or you have a justification to be binging every day and eating just garbage is no, you don't need to do that. 300 to 500 extra calories a day is plenty from the physiological growth of your child. I think you can hear my daughter now in the back. She just woke up. With that being said, having worked with many women and watched my wife go through her pregnancy, dude, I watched my wife, who is literally like the least picky eater ever, have some really insane food aversions during her first pregnancy. Like, she's the least picky eater you've ever met in your life. She'll eat anything and she's totally fine with it. She has an amazing relationship with food, but out of nowhere, she's like, oh my God, I can't have that. Oh my God, I can't have that. And I was like, damn. Like, this is insane. So literally for the first 3 months, the only thing she could really stomach were crackers and mac and cheese. She ate a fuck ton of mac and cheese.
Like, kind of jealous. I'm like,
Dude, I was like, damn, I really want to have. And she was getting this like really good mac and cheese. Like, damn, that's like, that's not that diet mac and cheese. This is that like that mac and cheese. I was like, oh God, that looks amazing. And so there were some days where she was not eating in a big surplus and other days where she was like, yeah, that's like a massive surplus and just basically for mac and cheese. So from the physiological perspective, no, you don't need that many extra calories. And some women, they are meticulous and on point and like they don't have crazy cravings or crazy aversions and they get through their pregnancy relatively fine. Other women have really, really intense difficulties. And we're not even discussing the lifestyle and behavioral factors. Some women, maybe they don't have to work. Maybe they have a lot of help around the house. Maybe it's relatively low stress, whereas someone else throughout their entire pregnancy, they have to go to work. Maybe they have other kids they're also taking care of. Maybe they have a sick parent. Who knows? Like, the life stressors behavioral aspect is equally important to all of this in addition to the physiological. So comparing yourself to other women who are going through pregnancies is I think an effort and an exercise in futility. But understanding your own personal situation is incredibly important here. So no, again, you don't need a ton of extra calories, and there's no like physiological justification for it, but it really does depend on you from a behavioral, psychological, and what's actually happening to you. But if you understand, no, you don't need to quote unquote eat for two and have a lot of extra calories, I think that can help you get to a better place of, all right, I really don't need to be overfeeding so much. What was the next question? Or do you think I answered that one enough? Or what do you think, Tony?
Do you stay in normal maintenance calories during pregnancy? I think you addressed that.
Yep.
Then, yeah, you used to address that. So then she actually sent another message and said, it didn't let me finish. So okay. She got more questions.
Okay, let's hear it.
Can I still lift weights while pregnant and, of course, keep walking and moving? I also ride horses, but I'm sure that will need a doctor's opinion.
That's definitely going to need a doctor's opinion, riding horses. Strength training is okay, but this is another huge, huge caveat, and people get really emotional, upset about this. If you already strength train and lift heavy, then it like prior to your pregnancy, then you can handle it better. Whereas if you haven't really done much heavy strength training and then you get pregnant and then you decide you really want to start lifting heavy, that's not the best idea. That's not a very smart way to do it. And for whatever it's worth, my wife, she is very strong. She loves strength training. Before we started dating, she loved strength training. And during her pregnancy, she's still strength trained, but she reduced the weight by like 50%. Mm-hmm. There just was no need for her to be going anywhere near maximal effort. And I know there are some amazing women in the fitness industry and not in the fitness industry who lift super heavy throughout their pregnancy. And that's amazing. That's fantastic. And as long as you had a healthy pregnancy and your baby's healthy and you're healthy, fine. I'm not hating on you. But I see a lot of these women being like, every woman should do this. And I'm like, that's really bad advice just to blanketly say every woman should be doing this. I think there are some real potential issues with it. And I think any doctor who specializes in this would agree. Generally speaking, yes, you can still strength train, but the level of intensity that you bring to your strength, I think, should be somewhat less. You should not be straining as hard. And again, I know I'm going to get some women pissed off by saying this, but it's true. Like if you have a high level of strength training experience, that's fine and you're welcome to do it. But for most people, most women who, especially if they don't have such a high level of strength training, I do think you should reduce the intensity by probably at least 25%, if not more. And with my wife, we wanted to be a little bit extra cautious. And she also wasn't feeling very good. She was really nauseous in the first trimester. It wasn't something that she was excited to do anymore. So we reduced the intensity pretty significantly, but she was still strength training. It just wasn't as high of an intensity.
And then, you know, walking and moving.
A ton of walking and movement when she could. And yeah, I think walking and movement is probably the most important, and trying to get as good sleep quality as you can. Strength training a couple times a week with, like, again, relatively reduced, lower intensity. Yeah. But yeah, just more than anything, keeping the habit of it. Keeping the time of, okay, well, I'm still going to make this a priority in my life. Because again, I think the behavioral component is arguably the most important part. And the difference that I've seen in the women who've really been able to, I'm going to use this term, I know people are going to get really upset, but bounce back after their pregnancy, it's like the main one is, did they keep it a priority throughout their pregnancy? Because if you take 7, 8, 9 months off and you don't have it in your schedule anymore, it's not a priority. Well, once the child is born and it gets even more difficult from a hormonal behavioral, from a hormonal and emotional perspective, from a behavioral and actual everyday life situation where like you're barely getting any sleep, you're constantly like, whether it's feeding or worried about what's going on with the child, if you haven't kept that schedule and priority, it's going to be way more difficult to now just get it back all of a sudden. So the women who I've seen have been able to quote unquote bounce back the most quickly are the ones who kept that schedule throughout the pregnancy. Whereas if they just let it go entirely, well, then getting back into it became exponentially more difficult. And there are so many different factors at play. There's so many different health factors, whether you get preeclampsia, there's so many different things that could happen during a pregnancy that could affect this. What I would say is I think it's a huge disservice to women to say that like you're not going to be able to get back to where you were and even better. I think it's a huge disservice. You can absolutely go through your pregnancy and also you can gain a significant amount of weight, give birth to a healthy child, and then get back to where you are now and even stronger and better and higher performing. You can absolutely do that. And I think it's a disservice and misleading to tell women that they can't do that. I also think that it's very difficult and it's very challenging and it's a remarkably, remarkably hard situation, but you can do it. You can absolutely do it. It's just, it's going to take a lot of time and effort and work. And, you know, my daughter is now, she's like 14 months as of recording this. And I think it wasn't until she was probably around like 8 or 9 months that my wife really started to feel like, okay, I'm really getting back into it now. My wife got her nutrition in check, like, basically immediately post delivery, like bang, like crushed it. And I've had a lot of female clients do it very similarly. So she lost a lot of the weight pretty quickly because her nutrition just went boom, right back on track. Whereas she didn't really get very much back into strength training probably until about like, she got back into strength training immediately, but not like heavy strength training until like 8 or 9 months. Now, over a year later, like she's killing it, lifting super heavy. She loves it. It makes her feel really good. Like her favorite type of exercise is strength training. But from the intensity perspective, it took her almost a year to really get back into it at a higher level. And that's fine. There's no rush. Now she's just happy that she's doing it again.
Yeah. And I think like underlying the whole question was this idea of like, can I still be this best version of myself?
Yes.
Post-pregnancy for my kids? Yeah.
And you can. You can. I think from a physical perspective, yes. The other thing I'll bring up is it's very common for women to struggle with postpartum depression. And I'm not putting this, I don't wish this on anyone, but I think it's important to discuss the mental side of it as well, where you just might not feel your best and you might actually get back to where you were, but there might be, you might look at yourself differently and view yourself differently. And so it's important to remember that there are so many factors outside of just the physical here, outside of just the physiological, outside of just like, well, is this possible? Because there's the mental, there's the emotional, there's the practical, there's the behavioral, there's so much going on. And again, every woman experiences it differently. So you can absolutely be your best self. There is no question about it. I've noticed that, for whatever it's worth, I know I'm going to get people pissed, but I've noticed that some women, and this is, men do this too in other situations, but in this situation, it's obviously women because women are the ones getting pregnant, but which is a weird thing if anyone's upset about me saying that in today's day and age, but like, whatever. It's a, anyway, Tony's just laughing. He's like, oh shit, he went there. But if a woman gets pregnant and she has a very difficult time in her postpartum and she gains a lot of weight and she doesn't get back, I've noticed that oftentimes that woman will tell other women that they'll never be able to do it. They'll never be able, like, it's just impossible. Oh, it's just impossible. I experienced this for many fathers who went before my daughter was born. They're like, oh yeah, good luck. You're never going to be able to work out. You're going to gain all this weight. You're going to lose your muscle. And a lot of fathers being like, yeah, good luck. Like your fitness is going out the window. And then they saw me working out at 10 p.m., 11 p.m., midnight so that I could do the 1 or 2 a.m. feedings. And they were like, oh shit. Like, I guess I could have done that too. I didn't. So prioritizing your health and prioritizing your fitness is never easy. It's always difficult. It's always going to take a little bit of extra effort. So you can absolutely do it. It's just, it's going to be more difficult. It's going to be more difficult, period, end of story. But don't believe or listen to anyone who is trying to tell you that you can't do it, because you absolutely can.
Yeah. And the fact that she's been dialed in and has made progress and like is really happy with where she's at now, to me is a good sign, because it's like, all right, she already knows kind of how to dial it in.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right.
How are you on time? I know we started a little early today.
Yeah, you know what? I'm actually going to go. I got jujitsu, so I'm going to head out. I'm going to say hello to my daughter and good morning before I head out. This was great. Thank you, Tony. Thank you to everyone for listening. If you would like us to answer your questions, shoot Tony a DM. Make sure you follow him on Instagram. We'll put his Instagram handle in the show notes. Thank you, everyone, for your support, for your reviews, whether it's on Spotify, whether it's on iTunes. Thank you for leaving the 5-star reviews. I appreciate you. Have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you soon.